Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Jim, we start with Democrat Kirsten Powers and her latest editorial, her latest column in USA Today as the good martini, as she calls out President Obama for his blatant indifference to the persecution of Christians, particularly in the Middle East. She starts off by saying, "What do you call it when 12 men are drowned at sea? Answer, religious persecution. Yet when a throng of Muslims threw a dozen Christians overboard a migrant ship traveling from Libya to Italy, Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi missed the opportunity to label it as such. Standing next to President Obama at their joint news conference, Renzi dismissed it as a one-off event. It's not about a clash of religions." And she says, "The problem was that Obama did nothing to change that narrative. Obama was mute on the killings. He failed to interject any sense of outrage or even tepid concern for the targeting of Christians for their faith." As she says, "Religious persecution of Christians is rampant worldwide, but nowhere is it more prevalent than the Middle East and Northern Africa, where followers of Jesus are the targets of religious cleansing. Pope Francis has repeatedly decried the persecution and begged the world to help, but it has little impact. Western leaders, including Obama, will be remembered for their near silence as this human rights tragedy unfolded. The president's mumblings about the atrocities visited upon Christians, usually extracted after public outcry over his silence, are few and far between." Jim, she's got some loyalties towards Hillary. Maybe she's trying to help distance her from the president, but she is very sincere about this issue, and she nails the president pretty hard here.
Yeah, I think this is really actually a sleeper issue as we head into 2016, in the sense that there are a lot of Americans who, even if the administration isn't talking about this a lot, even if we feel like, you know, sometimes the media covers this with a great deal of depth and detail, and sometimes they don't. But my suspicion is that in America's churches, this does get discussed. This does get people pointing to talk about horror and shock and a sense of powerlessness and helplessness and a frustrated sense that, for obvious reasons, a lot of American Christians will feel like a need to do something for their brothers and sisters in their faith. But even if you're not a Christian, this is a form of really just vicious religious persecution. And what's fascinating is the Middle East has always had shocking brutality. Go back to not just Bashar Assad, but, you know, his father just wiping a city off, reducing it to rubble during an uprising in the 1980s. Saddam Hussein gassing the Kurds in the 1980s. We're not shocked to see massacres or brutality in this part of the world. But I don't think we've ever seen this broad-based targeting of Christian communities and, of course, the Yazidis and other religious minorities. The Pandora's box has been opened. There is this unleashing of this effectively genocidal effort against the world's Christians. And the American administration issues the standard mealy-mouthed press release about it. And that's really shocking and horrifying. For obvious reasons, you'll see Republicans talking about this more. And I think at some point, look, maybe Hillary Clinton is going to have to address and say, hey, we've talked a lot about the need to stand up for minorities. We've talked about the need to stand up for human rights. But we haven't done it for these. She'll emphasize for the past 4 years, even though I don't think the Obama administration's record on protecting the rights of religious minorities was all that terrific in the first term either.
Yeah, exactly right. So I don't know how much distance she'll be able to claim, but she'd be smart to jump on the issue now. And again, kudos to Kirsten Powers, who's probably getting quite a bit of backlash as a result of that column from her Democratic friends. On to the bad martini today. And Jim, today is Earth Day. I'm sure you've rearranged your entire schedule to do things that are friendly towards the planet. Our building here at Radio America had a special Earth Day event in the lobby yesterday where you could learn all about ways to improve the planet. They also had bags of popcorn for some reason. So I, of course, grabbed the popcorn and immediately headed to the elevator. But the story coming, oddly enough, from NBC News, Earth Day founder killed, composted girlfriend. Some may remember this story if you're old enough. Ira Einhorn was on stage hosting the first Earth Day event at the Fairmount Park in Philadelphia on April 22, 1970. 7 years later, police raided his closet and found the composted body of his ex-girlfriend inside a trunk. This guy allegedly helped bring awareness to environmental issues and preached against the Vietnam War. But on September 9, 1977, he and his girlfriend, Holly Maddox, went back to the apartment that they shared. She was never seen again. 18 months later, they found her body stuffed inside a trunk inside his closet. It was partially mummified and also been packed with styrofoam, air fresheners, and newspapers. He eventually fled to Europe, was on the lam for over 2 decades, finally brought back to the United States and convicted of first-degree murder, so he's in prison for the rest of his life. But if you want to know how Earth Day was founded, there you go.
Yeah, now there are a couple of lefties who said, well, he's not really the co-founder. He's up on stage at the first major event. It's not like he's got no connection to it whatsoever. I also want to point out in epic examples of understatement, I was not familiar with this until somebody had sent this, called this to my attention, Becky Kavoyan on Twitter this morning. And you're like, oh my goodness. I mean, the fact that he composted his girlfriend, it's just that perfect little, I'd say delicious detail, but maybe delicious isn't the right word. But just this perfect detail because, you know, at least he's composting, right, Greg? He's consistent with his principles about caring for the environment. And think about it. Think about all the carbon emissions she won't make because he brutally murdered her. So he is living up to his principles in that perspective. So I'm looking over at Salon.com. They wrote about him way back in 2002. You ready for the headline, Greg?
Sure.
Ira Einhorn's long, strange trip. I mean, yeah, I guess. For what it's worth, the environmentalists say, oh, he didn't really set up the event in 1970 and he just spoke there and all that kind of stuff. But no doubt this was a guy who was very big in the 1960s and 70s and associated himself with the cause and wanted to believe in that, and kind of a hippy-dippy type. And for those of us who've always seen kind of this ugly underside to some of these politics, well, there you go. Some corners of the environmental movement have more in common with the Soylent Corporation than they like to admit.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the part that I left out of the original narration. When they finally brought him back to the U.S. to testify, he said that he didn't kill his ex-girlfriend, that she had been killed by CIA agents who framed him for the crime because he knew too much about the agency's paranormal military research. So
there you go.
There is that.
If that's not a really persuasive defense, what is, right?
That's right. It's hard to believe the jury didn't buy that one.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure the CIA paranormal team got to him. So.
Well, and again, you know, Radio America's had formal events. National Review's had formal events. I mean, can we really say we've never had a murderer as our master of ceremonies? Oh, yes. Yes, we can, actually. Wow. All right.
Who hasn't, right? Yeah.
Speaking of National Review, it's always nice when one of our parent companies is the focal point of one of the martinis. Let's go to the crazy one. And it involves the one and only Donald Trump, Jonah Goldberg, Steve Hayes of the Weekly Standard. Donald Trump has gone on a Twitter rant against both of them, essentially saying that they are uniquely responsible for the fact that both of their magazines are headed to into the financial abyss, which is not true. But it all started apparently, at least the latest incarnation, because Steve Hayes was on a panel up in New Hampshire and essentially dismissed Donald Trump as a clown. So Donald Trump goes onto Twitter and goes, at Weekly Standard, I know your business is failing, but you should try to get writers far better than at Stephen F. Hayes. And then somehow he decides to throw Jonah into the mix. Jonah Goldberg at Jonah NRO, one of the once great NRO. National Review is truly dumb as a rock. Why does Brett Baer put this dummy on his show? Calls Hayes a failed writer. Says he was a joke at the New Hampshire media panel. The best part of Jonah's response, not on Twitter, but in an actual piece on National Review, is that, first of all, I love National Review, and while it seems like Mr. Trump is under the impression that I am somehow running the magazine, maybe he knows something I don't know. After all, any man who could bankrupt a casino knows more about bankruptcy than I could ever learn. So, Jim, clearly we're on message for 2016.
There are a couple of fun wrinkles to this. One being that I am a second-generation Donald Trump antagonist. Sometime when the time is right, I will tell the tale or get my dad to tell the tale of trying to do deals with Donald Trump back in the 1980s. And basically, dad walked away from the experience believing that Donald Trump was not a guy you could trust and an absolute not a good man, shall we say. So that always colored my impression of him. I always enjoyed the Spy magazine and Saturday Night Live mockery of him throughout the ages. It's not like anything recently happened. The only thing I think of is that Hayes in some big 2016 roundup said that Trump was a joke. And if you don't want people to treat you as a joke, then you have to not behave like a joke. And Donald Trump, you know, went to the NRA convention and went on at length about how the Chinese manufacturing practices and Japan. You know, he went and he gave a total non-NRA speech to the NRA convention. He's not alone in doing that, but he just came out. He shows up and he talks about what Donald Trump wants to talk about, not necessarily what the audience there is kind of gathered about. By the way, because they both have goatees and they have sort of a similarity, I can't help but suspect Donald Trump may have mixed them up. That guy who was on the special report with the goatee on Fox News, that guy is an SOB. Well, you know, he's a huge jerk. Huge. So, by the way, I'm really hoping at the NRA convention that Trump would run into Ted Nugent. So you could have Huge and the Nuge together on one stage. So for some reason, Trump has just decided to, you know, and he says National Review's in trouble. That's not the case at all. Folks may have heard about a recent shift to nonprofit status, or I would say intentional nonprofit status. My understanding is this is, you know, keeping us in good shape for the very long haul. So I, you know, that all is not true. I don't understand where he's getting this from, and I think he's just blurts out whatever pops into his mind, and that's not really a shock considering the past things Donald Trump has said. But it is kind of fascinating that, just as Jonah pointed out, everyone always says Donald Trump is this brilliant strategist who's always 10 steps of everyone. He knows how to self-promote and all that kind of stuff. I don't know how getting into a Twitter fight with Jonah Goldberg promotes the Trump for President 2016 effort at all. I don't get how, you know, maybe there's some secret plan that we're not seeing. But if, you know, 18 months from now we're here and Donald Trump has gone nowhere, then you'd have to say, no, it really is as it seems, that Donald Trump is this unbelievably thin-skinned egomaniac who feels this need to lash out at anybody who criticizes him. And who, when he gets told, when people say you're not a serious candidate, instead of doing things that would make people think of him as a serious candidate, he just lashes out at them. And that's, you know, that's Donald Trump in a nutshell. So we'll see how many more days this goes on. Maybe this is all leading up to a new Trump the board game or new Trump necktie line or something like that. There's a lot of hype around every Donald Trump announcement. And then you find out, oh, it's that. So there are some days there's a crazy martini, Greg, and then some days I think just gets into more of the surreal martini.
Trump started the Twitter fight with Jonah. Jonah won the Twitter fight, at least at this point, because Jonah told him to stop essentially whining like a 14-year-old girl. Trump fired back with, "That's an insult to women. You need to resign either now or later." And Jonah fired back with, "Actually, yes, it is an insult to 14-year-old
yes!
girls." So score points for Jonah there. But if it's Donald, it's the crazy martini. That's just pretty much the way it goes. So
he'll come after you, Greg.
And you. You're a colleague.
You don't know what you're talking about. What's this Radio America thing? You guys are going out of business, too. You guys are making a huge mistake. Huge.
Oh, good times. Jim, well, enjoy the scorn of the Donald. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
I'll live with it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.